Good morning, citizen. Your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to go to www.abovepolitics.com. There you will be able to gather up the necessary intel needed to be successfully informed. You'll not only learn what's happening in the U.S., but also in the U.K., Europe, and the world over. We suggest you familiarize yourself with issues such as the economy, military security actions, energy and science, religion, and spiritual influences. It would also be wise to visit the political ideology area to gather up as much information as you can in these areas. General ideology, conservatism, liberalism, socialism, and the moderate. While there, also be sure to check out what others are saying in the Slugfest arena. The intel you gather from Politics of War and the debate forum will be essential in getting into the right mindset on who is a friend or who is a foe. We'd like you to also keep tabs in the candidates area for information as to whom has their sentiments floating either to the right or to the left, as this could prove to be invaluable. I can't stress enough to act in a civil way while at www.abovepolitics.com as to not raise any suspicions as to your true identity and agenda. Good luck with your quest, citizen. This message will now self-destruct.
Welcome to ATS Mix.
I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
Well, you know, there's a big buzz going on right now at AboveTopSecret.com, Dave.
Is it flies?
Yes, and we've handed out the the logo embossed ATS fly swatter.
You know, I tell you, that's one of the most popular items on the site thing, you know, where it has the caps and the ball caps and right. The official Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous finger shirts.
Oh, yes. Now, watch how the server will crash now as everybody will be heading over there to try to grab that. Actually, this is not only a landmark interview that you and I did earlier today, but it, for me personally, it's the Holy Grail.
It really is, you know. And, you know, I got to tell folks, I mean, Johnny and I, as everybody knows, we went to the Bay Area UFO Expo summer of 2006 when Johnny and I first met each other, and Springer actually first met Johnny and John Lear and John Rhodes. And, you know, it was just a great, great, great weekend. And one of the top people that we wanted to interview, especially because of the Johninators, if we got no other interview, he wanted to interview Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. You know, we got involved in things. I think Jesse got annoyed by John Lear interviewing himself. And
well, we had a speaker pointed right at him.
we just didn't make connection. So, yeah, I mean, talk about John's Holy Grail. This was the interview that was his Holy Grail.
Yeah, I was really kind of disappointed that we weren't able to follow through with that, but there were schedule conflicts on his end and our end, and it just didn't happen. And so, to use a Davinism, I was chomping at the bits, waiting patiently until we could have this interview. Unfortunately, the public relations group for AboveTopSecret.com was able to piece this together. And in fact, you'll hear me giggling all the way through, just like a little girl. No.
And you know what's really funny about this thing, and it's not funny. You never know about interviews, and Johnny and I have done a buttload so far, but not only do we cover the things that everybody thinks Jesse is about, which is the Roswell thing and that heritage, but we also get to talk about his military career, which I was very much gung-ho about.
Oh, sure. Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. is the only person that we know of publicly that even though the government refuses to admit that there are UFOs and aliens and blah, 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 they do admit that he is the person who is still alive that has helped the material that was found there at the Roswell crash right. debris site. Hence, again, a reason why I consider this to be the Holy Grail, at least for me. So you folks are really going to enjoy this, and we don't want to take any more of your time about it. And so what do you say we get right to it?
This is going to be one hell of a ride.
The following is an ATS Mix exclusive interview.
Well, you know, the news right now, Dave, out on the forums is
right.
Everybody is excited as a little girl right now.
Yeah, they are, including you and I.
Absolutely. And let's tell everybody why they should be so excited. A little more than about 60 years ago, one of the most famous UFO events in modern history occurred in an area about 70 miles from Roswell, New Mexico. And right smack dab in the middle of this grandiose event was our guest, Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. He graduated in 1961 with a degree in medicine from the LSU School of Medicine at New Orleans. He joined the U.S. Navy in 1962 and even participated in the Cuban Missile Crisis. He joined the Montana Army National Guard in 1973 and completed helicopter flight training as a flight surgeon at Fort Rucker, earning his wings in 1981. During his career in the National Guard, he was appointed state surgeon for the state of Montana and retired from the military for a second time in August of 1996 on his 60th birthday. He was called back to active duty in October of 2004, shortly after his 68th birthday. He then served as a flight surgeon for the 189th Attack Helicopter Battalion in Iraq. He is the author of a most intriguing book entitled The Roswell Legacy. And we'd like to encourage you all, please, to go to his website located at www.marceljr.com, and that is spelled MarcelJr.com, all one word. Dave Rabbit and myself are deeply honored right now to have with us today Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. Hello, Dr. Marcel. How are you?
Well, I'm very well. Gosh, my head is really swollen after all that all the introduction thing there. I'm pretty modest, and I'm not used to that. So,
well, Jesse, thank you so much for joining us today, because you know, Johnny and I first met you at the San Jose UFO Expo this last summer, or summer of 2006. And really wanted, you were kind of our holy grail to do an interview with. And as luck would have it, you were extremely busy and pulled in a thousand different directions, and so were we, and we're not able to. And I cannot tell you how excited Johnny was. I mean, Christmas morning has come again today.
Oh, yes.
Because when I said, hey, John, the PR guys have got us set up with Jesse. You want in on this? So trust me, he would. There's nothing except for maybe major surgery or being under a knife. You being in the medical department, you can figure that one out. That would have prevented him from talking to you today. So thank you so much for helping him attain his holy grail. You know,
that may be a little overblown there, but I appreciate the comment.
Yeah, well, it's not overblown at all, because both he and I have a tremendous respect for you. You have a tremendous amount of fans around the world. But, you know, I want to do my part. You know, John's the aficionado. John's the reader. He knows everything about all the stuff that you are very involved with. My expertise, however, is on the military side. I did three tours in Vietnam. I know that you started your military career in 61. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, did you do any tours in Vietnam at all?
I was on board a troop transport in and out of there during the Westpac tours.
Out of Cameron?
I was on an APA 227, it's at Renville, and we hauled troops in to that Southeast Asia area. I'm not sure what the ports are called at this point. I forgot about all those. But
what year was that, Jesse? Do you remember?
That was 62, 63.
Wow. Well, you were there before, you know, the real escalation happened.
Yeah, before it really got started. Before the Gulf of Tonkin thing.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're talking. You're talking Kennedy's era.
Yeah. So it was an interesting tour. We went to China, Japan, and Southeast Asia area there. So, yeah, that was a good tour. I enjoyed it.
Well, you know, I mean, your background obviously is Navy. Is your whole career been Navy? I assume it is.
Well, no, actually, I spent about 9 or 10 years in the Navy. That's when I got out, and that's when I came to Montana and joined the Montana Army National Guard here in Helena, and went to Fort Rucker for the flight surgery school.
Right.
So I have to have loyalties to both areas.
So you're Army now?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Well, you know, I did Well, you know, I was in the National Guard for about 9 or 10 years before I retired, more a little more than that, actually. And then I got called back to active duty in the regular, in the Army Reserve.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I retired. I retired the third time on December the 10th, 2005. So I think I'm retired now forever. But I hope anyway.
Well, you know, one thing about
going back.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing about people in your field. I mean, medical doctors and stuff. I mean, I was in you know, headquarters squadron, my three tours, and you know, they called it intelligence, which was kind of a misnomer because there was no intelligence there that I ever saw. But that said, you know, I mean, it was not like we were in a career field that was really catastrophic to whatever they were trying to achieve. But a medical doctor, I mean, my Lord, I mean, you know, you guys get snatched up left and right, do you not?
Well, we're kind of like a valuable commodity to them, special flight surgeon. That's the reason I got recalled to active duty for Iraq duty, you know, for the my helicopter squadron.
Well, tell me about tell me about your Iraq duty. I mean, you know, I mean, without giving anything that's confidential. But.
Well, my job was a flight surgeon. It was a kind of a fun deal, although I won't say it. Actually, fun is not the right word for it, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
As a flight surgeon, your job was to maybe just look after the flight crews, hold minor sick call, do, you know, the physicals on them, and fly with them. So you spent a lot of time in the Black Hawk, at least I did. I got 225 combat hours in the Black Hawk when I was out there.
Wow.
So your job is to stay with the crews as much as possible, and so you understand the same dangers and stresses that they go under, so you'll help understand what's going on with them.
Well, do they take you on board because if something happens and you guys go down, that there's somebody there with medical experience?
No, not necessarily. Your job there, again, is just to monitor the situation in the helicopter and get to know the guys. You know, in Iraq, we always flew two helicopters together, you know.
Right.
You never flew solo, I guess.
Right. Same way in Vietnam, right.
And because one gets shot down, the other guy would stop and pick up the survivor.
Exactly.
So my job was not really to treat, but just to be there, so to speak, which was good. I enjoyed that.
All right. Well, when did you get the call of duty, if you will, to be involved with the Veterans Administration?
Well, I had retired from my private practice in about 1998, and I needed a place to go, so I just went over to the VA system there because I figured it would be a little better, a little less night call, which it is, and it's busy, but the night call situation is much more favorable. I enjoy my work there, too. So I enjoy the veterans, you know, because we're all kind of have like minds about military stuff. So.
Exactly. Unless you have served in the military, or unless you have put yourself in harm's way in a war or a scenario to where you're taking hostile fire, nobody really knows what a military man and woman goes through, do they?
I guess not. You know, it makes you appreciate life, you know, when you get shot at and it missed.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. Churchill once said, "The greatest thrill a guy can have is to be shot at and without permanent effect."
And I'm sure, you know, like me, you know, you've had your share of friends and whatever that you know didn't quite make the tour with you.
Yeah.
I always try to honor all of our fallen comrades and everything that I do on a daily basis because, you know, if it wasn't for the sacrifices of the people, the men and women in the military. I mean, we wouldn't be able to enjoy the freedoms that we both have.
It's a shame that not everybody in the United States understands that, you know, because we enjoy our freedoms because of our strength, you know,
peace through
strength. And that's a good saying, and no truer words have ever been said.
And there, one other question before I throw it to Johnny, and then we start getting into his expertise of field, is, you know, since you're in the Veterans Administration, there has been, and I CNN, you know, I mean, I don't even like watching the news because everybody in the mainstream media has their own slant on different things, and it drives me absolutely nuts and crazy, especially being military. But they've come up, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, whatever his name is, he did this little thing talking about the war against the VA and making comments in relationship to that, you know, veterans that are coming back from the Iraq war right now, you know, some of them are not getting the best treatment in the world. Now, I know how it was in Vietnam. I know the Ron Kovic story. I know all about all that. I mean, the VA has come leaps and bounds from the veterans of Vietnam, has it not?
What? light years ahead. You know, I can't speak for other VA centers, but I can only speak for the VA hospital here at Fort Harrison, Montana, out of Helena. And I'd say it's a first-class institution. I have had nothing but good comment, good feedback from the veterans on the type of care that is rendered there. So, but I can't say that for all of them because I have no experience with the others. But I do say that on this one basis, the VA hospital at Fort Harrison is top-notch, not just because I work there, but because I know it to be true.
Putting a label against all VA hospitals, I think, is truly unfair, and I know I think you would agree with me on that.
Yeah, a blanket condemnation does not work.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Certainly, there's improvement that can be made in every institution, and the VA is certainly no exception to that. But I think they're working on it. They're trying because they realize they have a real job ahead of them. Because we're going to be receiving veterans, take care of the veterans from the Iraqi War for years and years to come yet, including going back to World War II. But there are a lot of veterans in the country here.
Right, there really are.
We're going to pause for a small break, and when we get back, we're going to be asking Dr. Marcel about that very famous day back in the early parts of July, right after this short word.
If you like what we discussed, you're going to love AboveTopSecret.com. I can tell you, AboveTopSecret.com's members and staff, they're top-notch. They're smart, current, articulate, and would you believe they're even polite? In fact, AboveTopSecret.com is world-renowned for its excellent management. And since they're one of the best boards on the internet with thousands of posts every day, you know they're doing it right. They've also got a hilarious podcast called ATS Mix, hosted by legendary Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, that covers all the hottest AboveTopSecret.com topics and conspiracy rumors. AboveTopSecret.com has dozens of forums, from UFOs and aliens to conspiracies, paranormal, and much, much more. So much more that I don't have time to name them all. Take it from me, AboveTopSecret.com is worth your time, because with more than 3 million posts and more than 250,000 topics, the truth is in there. So stop by AboveTopSecret.com and tell them I sent you. You can thank me tomorrow.
Well, as I said, Jesse, we have a number of members here at AboveTopSecret.com and listeners worldwide that just couldn't wait for Dave and I to have our interview with you. And so what I'd like to ask you, sir, before we actually get into the events that happened there at Roswell, several weeks prior to this event, there was another event that had happened, and I believe it was just several weeks prior to that, which was Kenneth Arnold, who had been flying around Mount Adams and had seen some supposed objects that was later coined to be saucers, flying saucers, and they were skipping about Mount Adams. I was just kind of curious, did that news make your folks' newspaper around your area?
Boy, not that I recall. You know, of course, mind you, that was summer, and I was out of school, and I just didn't pay any attention to the news nor the headlines, so I have not the foggiest idea whether it was made any blip on the radar screen in Roswell. Kind of doubt it, but who knows?
Well, Jesse, tell us a little bit about your dad and what function he served in the military.
Well, he was the intelligence officer for the 509th Bomb Group. And as everybody knows, that's a very famous bomb group. They're the ones who dropped the nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And my dad was deeply involved with the missions there and with their practice, you know, bomb drops in Nevada, practicing dropping the bomb on, you know, target areas. So, you know, he was in the thick of things, and as the base intelligence officer, well-respected, well-trained, no-nonsense type of a guy.
Right.
And that was his job at the Roswell Army Airfield, too, as the intelligence officer for the 509th. Again, a no-nonsense type of guy, very serious, took his work very, very seriously.
Hmm. Well, now, actually, prior to him actually getting involved, from what I understand, weren't there also some reports around the Roswell area that occurred? Weren't there some sightings that were like the Wilmots?
You know, I don't know. I was not aware of it. If there were there, I didn't. You know, I was not aware of that.
Well, when
you know, prior to July of 1947, no, I was not involved with anything like that.
Right. Well, when actually did your dad get involved and get called in to investigate the Mack Brazel incident?
Well, it was at that time, I guess mid-July, or at least the first week in July. Yeah, his, you know, like he was called out fairly frequently on various things because part of his job was aircraft accident investigation and to get the lowdown on aircraft incidents. And I know one day he just disappeared from sight because I said, well, he's just going on another mission out there. And he didn't come back until the next morning, really early, and that's when he woke us up and showed us the debris that he collected from the desert of the, out there where the Brazos Ranch is located.
The story goes that he had the material kind of laid out in your living room and kind of displayed. What was it that you actually saw?
Okay, actually, it was on the kitchen floor.
Okay,
and he got us. He got my mother and myself up. It was I'd been asleep for several hours, so I have no idea what time it was. But he was excited. He came, got us up. Says, "I want to show you this. This is something that crashed out there, just not too far away from here." And I think, now, I believe he used the words "flying saucer," but again, I'm not sure about that. But words to that effect. And he said, "This is something that we, you know, don't know what it was. It's not ours, so to speak." He said, "I want you to look at this and tell me what you think about this debris. What is your opinion on this?" And I looked at the floor. There's a lot of this metal foil-like debris, some I-beam rods, and some black plastic material. You know, not really, kind of nondescript type stuff. But I do recall distinctly him asking me to look for some electronic components, like vacuum tubes or resistors, condensers, or wires. So I kind of plowed through it, and then, of course, there wasn't anything like that. But he already knew that because he's the one to put it out there. And I guess he wanted to satisfy me about that. So I looked at this, you know, there's a foil, I guess, and very light material, and I didn't try to tear it or bend it or stress it like other people did. I understand that later that people could fold the foil up and it would unfold on its own. I didn't see that myself.
Wow.
But my dad recalled seeing that, and as a matter of fact, I remember later he said he took a larger piece to his office, and one of his enlisted men guy tried to bend it with a sledgehammer and couldn't do it. But again, I didn't try anything stressful like that. I just looked at it, and from my viewpoint, the most strange thing that I saw that night were the beams with the writing on it. You know, looked like hieroglyphics at first glance, or some mathematical or geometrical symbols of just imprinted on the inside edge of one of these little beams there. I recall a color; they were kind of like a violet, purplish hue, especially and they were semi-reflective if you held up to a light. And that was the strangest thing I saw that night.
Yeah. Was the object that you held up that had this writing on it, was it a metallic object?
Yeah, it was metallic. My impression was it was the same kind of material that the foil was made out of, except, you know, of course, much more rigid and thicker, you know, so to speak. So, but it was a metallic beam with the writing on the inside edge.
Let me do a quick follow-up here.
All right.
The material that you actually were holding, did it have a particular feel to it? I mean, was it dry or slick or rough?
Well, you know, I guess the best description would be like a kitchen wrap using in the aluminum, you know, aluminum kitchen wrap. That would be the closest description I can come to it. And actually, I think it's probably a little more substantial than that. But that's the closest thing I could come to it. So it was light, a little heftier than normal kitchen wrap would be. But that would be it.
Wow. Well, you know, we all lose parents. I mean, I just recently lost my mom Christmas. So, I mean, but, you know, close to the end of my mom's days, she used to reminisce about all kinds of things in her life and stuff. And you said that you had spoke somewhere that I read with your father in his last days. In the conversations with you and your dad, did he ever talk about, Jesse, the crash or the debris, or did he say anything about what he saw or remembered?
I was gone from home at that time, so I didn't really talk to him a whole lot about it, because actually one of the things he, as you know, he flew the stuff out to Fort Worth, to a General Ranger's office, and when he came back, he sat my mother and myself down and said, "Look, don't ever talk about this again. Didn't happen, non-event, so don't ever talk about it again." Of course, here we are talking about it, but he started talking about it himself in 78.
Right.
So, but I was away from home then. As a matter of fact, I was practicing medicine here in Helena, Montana.
Right.
But I do recall one of my last conversations with him was about the crash site. He had just come back from there from at the behest of one of the TV stations in New Orleans, and he had gone out to the crash area, and they got tape of him out there, and I jokingly asked him, did he have, or was there any of it still out there? And his words were, no, they vacuumed that up years ago. that was his word, vacuumed it up. So obviously, they something that the military did not want to fall into civilian hands. So, well, I understand maybe a small piece of it did fall in the hands of Bill Brazel, Mac Brazel's son, the ranger.
Right,
son.
Right.
But he said, no, they vacuumed it up.
Yeah. So were they out there with a Hoover, or you think they used some kind of other device?
Hoover or something like that. I don't know. I think they had a bunch of guys out there just going on hands and knees, just combing the area, because apparently Chrysler did cover up a fair distance. You know.
Well, I remember in basic training they used to have us police up the cigarette butts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean they had like hundreds of GIs on their hands and knees with just right beside each other. So I bet it was one of those kind of deals.
I can visualize that very well. I think exactly that's what it was. Excuse me.
You know, the general consensus is that the military said that it was a weather balloon.
That's okay.
And I'm just curious. Do you think that the military would have really got on their hands and knees to do such a cleaning and gleaning of a bunch of broken up weather balloon material?
Well, they're concerned about environmental contamination, so they want to make sure that the weather balloon was totally picked up. Of course, yeah, right. No, I don't think they'd have done it. the vacuum sweep of a weather balloon. No, I just don't think so. Because other weather balloons crashed out there too, but they sure didn't go out there and vacuum sweep those up. They're probably still out there, as a matter of fact. So,
well, getting back to the early July event, obviously something has been found. And now suddenly a press release is made to the news outlets. Who was it that made or wrote up the press release, and what was it that was said?
Well, I just recall hearing about this much later, but Lieutenant Walter Hauck was the public information officer there at the base. And I think, as it turns out, that Colonel Blanchard authorized him to release the story about a crashed disc or something like that. Recovered by the military. And so Walter Hout, Lieutenant Hout, sent it out to the news media, and it was picked up by the wires. And as a matter of fact, I remember my dad was getting calls from China even on this thing.
Really?
So it was pretty much in the world. It hit the world like a storm.
Right.
And then it just died very fast, too, once they decided to kill the story.
Yeah.
Oops, we made a mistake. Weather balloon. Sorry about that. Yeah, right.
Who was it that on the following day wrote and released that bit of information? Was that General Ramey?
I don't know. It probably came from his office. Whoever handled his public information officers.
Right.
Did that. So
I got to jump in here because I'm listening to Jesse and it's kind of going nuts. And this goes it is a perfect example of how the government tries to cover things up. So you're telling me basically one day passes and there is a media release, and then the next day passes and then they have another media release and it says, well, we were wrong about yesterday. I know what we said, but we changed our mind or whatever, and it wasn't really like that. This is kind of crazy, Jesse, but I mean, have you ever experienced anything, a roller coaster like this, of anything that you've ever done in your life?
No, that's got to be it. That's the one and only event that I can recall that was like that. It was pretty amazing. But there's a desperation to cover it up. I mean, they had to cover it up because, my gosh, we can't let the world know that there's others out there looking at us like this. After all, we just fought a big war here, so we can't get too much public concern about this thing.
All right, well, let me ask you from a military perspective. Do you think that the world could actually handle if they really knew that UFOs really exist?
Oh, I think so. As a matter of fact, I think most people down deep inside realize that, hey, we're not the only civilization certainly in this galaxy even. And we're doing pretty good ourselves on our technological advancements, but there must be guys out there who are far more technologically advanced than we are and are capable of interstellar travel. So I think most people, most thinking people, would down deep in their heart would realize that, hey, there's got to be others out there, and they probably have been here because we would trigger interest on their part.
Of course.
Absolutely. Well, during this time, when they actually invited the news media to come in to do some photographs. Did your dad bring some of the original material in there to be photographed?
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, he flew some of the debris, some representative portions of the debris to Fort Worth, to the Fort Worth Army Airfield for General Ramey, who was the 8th Air Force commander, for his inspection on this. And that's where those pictures were taken. You know, Bon Johnson of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, who's a photographer who I got to be good friends with after all this, took those pictures. And that's where those shots were taken.
Is the photograph and the material that's in that photograph, is that the same material that your dad brought home early that one morning?
No. You know, there's some major discrepancies there. You know, like if you look at the foil in the photograph was paperback, in other words, for structural rigidity, you know. And also, the beams there look like they were made out of wood, like kite sticks. But that was not like that at all. What I saw, so you know, because the foil was not paperback in our kitchen floor there, and the beams were made out of metal and not wood. So there are some big discrepancies. As a matter of fact, you know, my dad, one of the shots pictures shows my dad holding up a piece of the stuff. And the look on his face, you know, tells it all, like, you got to be kidding me. This is not what I found. What am I doing here? You know, but I'll go along with this because I'm under orders to do this.
Sure. Don't ask questions. Just follow the orders.
Oh, you bet. That's exactly right. That's what he was doing. He was a good soldier.
And you and I both know this, Jesse. I mean, you know, you can be a good soldier, but that doesn't mean that you're brain dead, that you can have your own opinions about stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They always just assume just because we're military that, you know, we don't have a personal opinion about things, you know.
We just happen
to follow a chain of command and follow orders and do our job, and, you know. But it doesn't mean that we'd particularly agree with everything.
Well, you know, I figured, well, this, you know, for reasons of their own, they just don't want to let people know what really happened out there. But I happen to be part of it. You know, it's, you know, they could not take my memories away from me, so they're there, and I knew what I saw.
Right.
But for some reason, the powers to be determined that this is not anything that that we want the average citizen of the world to know about. Although, again, I think everybody does know in the deep in their heart. Certainly, other countries, Brazil, you know, France, England, they're all in the UFO field too. They all know what's going on out there.
They've got to be someplace that they've taken this stuff. I mean, the only thing I can identify or equate to is the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they take the Ark and all of a sudden there's this huge government warehouse somewhere where they're storing stuff. Where do you think the debris is, Jesse?
Well, you know, I have no real good reason for saying this, but I feel that maybe Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. The only reason I say that is because I saw a letter written by Senator Goldwater, not addressed to me, but to other, I think, Mr. Graham at one time, say he tried to get into the Blue Room, or he asked people about that, and he was told never to ask about that again, and it's none of his business. And and he said we all know what was in there, but he was denied access because he did not have the reason to go in there.
And I had heard that before about Wright-Patterson, so that really adds fuel to that fire for me.
Did your father ever happen to say either that early that morning or later on in his life if he ever saw any bodies or the supposed aliens out at the crash site?
He never talked or confided that to me. I kind of think had he seen something as exotic as that, he would have told me about it. But no, he never brought the subject up.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question that kind of goes along with what John asked you. What's your take on what happened to the aliens? What did they do to them, basically, or where did they take them to? Wright-Patterson, you think, maybe?
Well, that would be my guess. But, you know, I think they're certainly a very interesting object. You know, I'm sure they did autopsies to find out how their bodies developed similar theories, maybe similar to ours or maybe dissimilar from ours.
Yeah.
See what a totally alien individual would look like, what makes him tick.
Right.
So I'm sure they did a lot of the research on that. DNA analysis, maybe, if there's DNA there. Who knows?
And I bet as a doctor, you'd be kind of interested in that also, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
If that's the way, you know, DNA is universal, maybe that's the way God did it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that would be, that's an interesting thing that you say. John, I'm sorry, I know I was going to throw it to you. But as a medical doctor, and with all the intelligence that you have in that field, I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if there was a way to do an autopsy or to do some kind of thing with an alien creature and match the DNA and prove exactly what you just said? Boy, you talk about a earth-shattering event.
Boy, it sure would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Hey, they're like us, you know. They're people like we are.
Sure. Right. We'd find out we're distant cousins, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
I suspect we are.
As long as we don't owe them money, that's the only thing that matters.
Let's hope they don't have a recession going on. You know, I'm curious, you know, over 60 years now since this event has happened, in any of this time, has anybody ever come up to you and go, hey, Jesse, come over here. I got something to share with you. Has anybody ever come up with you and said, I got something that you might not know about?
Oh, you know, I've had people do that, but it turns out anything that was, you know, anything that would really be earth-shattering discovery, no.
Well, has the experience that you've been involved with your family, has it affected you and your family's life in any way? I mean, from the time that you were an adult, basically.
No, you know, my family accepts what is out there. Yeah, they know pretty well. You know, my when my kids were growing up, you know, my two girls were growing up, my youngest ones, they were kind of scared of this idea, but they've grown to accept it. It doesn't bother them anymore, although I would assume they still wouldn't want to, you know, get deeply involved with this because they're just maybe still a little leery about other civilizations out there looking at us.
Right.
Well, kind of along the same line, if you don't mind my jumping in here, Dave, speaking of things affecting life, I'm just curious, had you ever noticed that this might have affected your military career in any way?
I don't think so, because I know there's been a lot of interest in it. I've had flag rank officers sit me down and talk to me about this thing, like, what do I know? What, you know, tell me what I know about this thing and what's my opinion. So, if anything, I don't know if it's been an enhancement, but it certainly hasn't been a detractor to my military career.
I had a couple of more things before we got to the member things, but have you ever, Jesse, in your entire life, ever... Now, I want to preface by saying, just so you know, that I am a true believer. I have seen flying saucers back in the 50s, mid-50s, when I was a kid. And I remember, I mean, I just have just stark memories of those times and that day. And this is back during the Project Blue Book days and all the other things they were investigating. Have you personally ever seen a UFO?
Yeah, I keep looking. You know, I have over 3,500 hours in the cockpit of a helicopter, and I've never seen anything. I really could not for sure identify. Yeah, I've seen some strange lights, you know, on occasion, but who knows what that is. So I don't know. I've never seen anything I could say, yeah, look at that. Where's the camera?
There right. I am. Before I let Dave get into some of these member questions from some of our astute members, I recall reading somewhere where I believe you went under hypnosis to see if possibly some other memories could come forward. What happened in that? How did that come about?
Well, you know, I think I'm a very poor subject for hypnosis because I'm not a strong believer. I'm not a real strong believer in it, so I'm not sure if anything, you know, dramatically different happened, you know,
right
during that, because I pretty well recall what was going on there. So, but well, that's a good try.
Sure. So nothing repressed came forward?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
Here's a question by a member by the name of Space Visitor. If I am correct, he says, you had in 1947 for a short time some real pieces of debris in your personal possession. Is that true or false?
No, I just looked at it. I did not keep any of it. I, you know, this was not mine to keep, you know, as Air Force property. So
yeah, but you know, as a kid, I mean, come on, you know, as a kid, you know, you see something sitting on the table.
But I was an Army brat, though. I was an Army brat, so I did not even consider keeping any of it.
Well, before you go on, Dave, did somebody come up and approach you and say that he had some material?
No, there's nothing like that.
Well, okay.
I guess they want to know about some of the black plastics. I don't know. No one has ever shown anything to me that I would say this is definitely it.
Right.
Maybe it looks like it, but do some isotopic analysis on it and things like that and see where if isotopes are different from earthly or our solar system, that'll tell them. But But I can't be sure about that.
Right. All right. Well, here's a second part of the question from Space Visitor, and this is pretty interesting. When Johnny and I didn't cover this, but he says, when the UFO cover up took place, were you or your mother or your dad threatened to your knowledge in any way?
No threats.
Okay. Member advisor says, is there any solid, irrefutable evidence that may be brought out in a conclusive way, yay or nay, on the existence of what you saw? I mean, you know, it's right now everybody's saying, well, allegedly your dad saw this and allegedly you saw that. But is there anything you think there'll ever be a time to where somebody will go yay or nay that it physically exists and we hold it up in our hands and everybody's taking pictures and stuff?
Well, I could hope so, but the first thing they had to find out where it is and then get it released through proper authority, you know. So I would hope that day would come, but it may not in my lifetime.
Okay.
I'm still satisfied with what I saw.
Yeah. Well, just a couple more questions, and then I'm going to throw it back to Johnny for some banter. This is member Off the Heisei. These member names drive me crazy. I heard stories about the debris spreading like water when being dropped onto a flat surface like a table. Do you think this is true?
I did not see that, no. The debris I saw was solid. It was not liquidy type stuff where it spread out like mercury on a table, no.
Right.
I did not see that.
All right. Well, last question from the membership, and there's a bunch, but you've already covered a lot of them. And this is by member Grinder. He says he doesn't have any questions, but he just wants to give you a thumbs up on your book and everything. And you know, I have a lot of admiration for anybody that can sit there and document what you did in your book. What a marvelous, marvelous book it is.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, the first printing is sold out now, and we don't have any copies left. But Career Press is going to be having another edition come out this fall. So there are no available copies at this point, but next fall it'll come out with maybe some additional material that the first book did not cover.
Are you planning on possibly writing another book?
No. That's it.
Well, that's simple enough.
Yeah, don't sugarcoat it, Jesse.
Yeah.
I mean, don't lead us on, Jesse. Just tell us the truth here.
Well, do you have any events or lectures coming up or appearances that you'd like us to do a small plug for?
You know, there's one coming up, and I'm not sure. I just got an email about this the other day, and I'm not sure where it is. I didn't even fill out the papers on it, but they want me to go out there for a little lecture, and I'm not sure where this is, but I'll have to.
Okay. Well, let me remind all our listeners and members alike that your website is located at www.marceljr.com, and that's MarceljR.com. And I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been to have you on here. And, you know, earlier I said that we had a lot of members and listeners that couldn't wait for this, and they were acting like they were as pleased as a little girl. Well, guess what? I was the little girl.
Okay, well,
don't get him started on that, Jesse.
Yeah, okay. Well, the pleasure's all mine.
Well, listen, I you know, from one military man to another, and I mean, obviously you can't see it, but I'm giving you a salute there, Colonel, because
thank you, sir.
I really appreciate your candor, your time, and can't thank you enough for your service to our country.
Well, you're true. Well, I appreciate that very much. Military's been most of my life, so and I'm dedicated to the military.
Would you be willing to possibly come back for another interview somewhere down the way?
Well, sure. Yeah, whenever the time is right.
That'd be perfect. And we thank you so much for your time.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to talk here.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, well, y'all have a good day there.
Okay. You too, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye.
And wow, Dave, what a great interview. I was not lying. I'm as happy and as giggly as a little girl. You can't see how big my grin is on my face right now.
I just don't want to see in the outfit. That's all I care about.
It's not a pretty sight.
I don't want to see that Catholic outfit on you at all, John. know? Well, I want to tell you.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before, but I mean, you know, back in San Jose, I mean, I know this was your holy grail.
Yeah.
And wow. I mean, I was just blown away. He is just so candid about the things. I mean, he just tells you. And what was really funny in the interview is that, you know, we're asking the question. He goes, well, no, I don't know anything about that. Silent. And we're scrambling, you know. I got lost a couple of times in the foray of questions. I guarantee it. You know, they, because in the military, man, you know, they don't do like the Rabbinator. They don't sit there and talk 15 minutes and have five things to say, you know. I mean, he's just very matter-of-factly, which shows his upbringing in his military background.
Absolutely. Well, one more time, we want to thank Dr. Jesse Marcel for his time, and especially all you members. Hey, thanks, members. On behalf of the AATS Mix, above topsecret.com, below topsecret.com, above politics.com, we appreciate you joining us. I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm Dave Rabbit, and we'll see you next time on the AATS Mix.
AATS Mix from abovetopsecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the AATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of AATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on AATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. Thank you.